We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to another live Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel, and we're talking a win tonight. Jack, what's up?
Happy birthday, D'Angelo Russell.
Yes, it was a great birthday for him. Dropped 40 points. He had 12 straight in the fourth quarter. Just really killed it this game and looked like an all-star.
Looked like an all-star. Him and Kemba going back and forth. It's one of those games that you just take with you. It was just like, Kemba had it in the third and early in the fourth, and then D'Angelo Russell was back and forth between these two guys. And, you know, we've made comparisons between D'Angelo and Kemba. D'Angelo also in his post-gamer with Michael Grady said that, you know, he's a guy that inspires him. You know, he wants to get to that level, that consistency. And it was just one of those games. It was back and forth. It was one for the ages, one of the best games of the season.
100%. And like you said, it was like Kemba went on that hot run, and all of a sudden D'Angelo's like, hold my beer. And he just went on the run of run of his own. So I was like, yeah, it was crazy. And that game was crazy. And that's where up 19 in the third quarter. It felt like maybe they were going to blow this one open. And the next thing you know, Charlotte went on a like 24-4 run. They were up 6 in the fourth quarter, up to 8 in the fourth quarter. And then the Nets were just resilient. And if you get the vibe with this team that like they're just not done until the shot clock rings at the end of the game.
Yeah, I was not confident when, you know, that buffer was just gone, that 19-point buffer was gone, and Charlotte continued to pile on that momentum, like in that 24-4 run. But then it was just D'Angelo Russell. You know, there was a nice little drive by Harris that swung the momentum a little bit. And, you know, shout out to Jared Allen, that big-time offensive rebound. You know, we've sort of criticized him in the past, and a lot of other people criticized him for his physicality and such. But the Nets really wanted this one, and, you know, D'Angelo Russell, that obviously that controversial ending to the game with Caris LeVert as well. It was one that was certainly earned and one that solidifies ourselves in the sixth spot, because if we had lost this one, Charlotte would have overtaken us.
Yeah, and you know, obviously they're going to play again. So at worst case, they're going to split the season series and no one will have the tiebreaker. Obviously, hopefully the Nets pick up that W. You mentioned Jared Allen. Not only that big offensive rebound, I thought in the end of the game when Zeller went out and Charlotte went small, he had a lot of big defensive possessions when they were playing zone. Tony Parker went at him, forced a couple turnovers. I think Jared Allen at times needs to have more confidence in himself. And we said this before, you know, especially in those pick and rolls. I don't know if it's the Nets coaches, but he drops deep so far where he's a quicker guy and he can recover a little bit. And I think they need to put him in a situation, take advantage of his athletic ability, especially because he's on the smaller side in terms of weight.
Yeah, laterally, he's okay. You know, when there was a couple of times on the perimeter, he was matched up with Kemba, and Kemba would settle for the sort of three, and that's fine. A lot of smalls will do that. But, you know, Jared Allen has shown in the past that he can, you know, move laterally. He's quick, especially for a guy of his side. So I'm expecting big things from him going forward. And, yeah, he was just great defensively tonight. Those blocks on Zeller, you know, a shout-out as well to the D'Angelo Russell defense tonight. I thought the effort and some of the plays from him, that disallowed block on Kemba Walker was – I mean, it evens out if we're going to talk about, you know, that Karis Levert, if you want to call it a foul, because the ref looked like he was going to signal it. I was worried. I will admit that my heart was in my panning out of my chest, let's put it that way. But D'Angelo Russell was killing it on both ends of the floor. And, you know, he's just become the leader. Like, he's just the face of the franchise. And, you know, we expect this from him now. We expect big time plays from him. And, you know, Damari Carroll, following that Cleveland Cavaliers performance, was just like to him, you're an all-star now. We need you to step up. And that's what he did. And he did it again tonight.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like he took over the team, gave him the ball, and he wanted the ball in those opportunities. And he really just pulled out the win. Like, the Nets were down in the situation and need somebody to step up. We saw Dinwiddie do it in the past. Tonight was D'Angelo Russell, and he just extended his game to another level.
Oh, big time. It's astounding to just see this guy grow, you know, 23-year-old, just continuing to grow. We don't even know. Like, he's become an absolute lethal perimeter threat. And he's using all these skills that he is becoming very, very good at to better other facets of his game. You know, he's drawing fouls on his jumper now, so he's getting a little craftier there. And, you know, not just from the mid-range too, where that awesome play where he nailed it and he got the M1 play, but, you know, he's becoming a little more flaily. He's getting some respect from the refs. You saw him speak to them a couple of times, just like having those conversations. It seems like with the team, you know, D'Angelo being the face of this sort of team right now, the respect is growing. And D'Angelo being, you know, 23 years old, you know, it's only onwards and upwards for here. And it's just a wonderful thing. And I think we hark back to our preview and then my OTG basketball sort of preseason preview of the Nets. And, you know, D'Angelo Russell, when he was holding down the Nets Twitter, his goal for the season was to play 82 games. And I think that simple goal for him is sort of panning out all these other great things that we've seen from him this season.
Yeah, and I think D'Angelo's only missed one game this year, and it was rest against the Bucks, I believe, in late December. So obviously he's healthy, and you mentioned it, just everything he's doing out there, and he's just taking his game to another level. But Jack, let's talk about some of the other guys tonight. Obviously, we could talk about D'Lo for the whole podcast. Your boy Joe Harris, you know, low key had a really nice game, 19 points, 5-7 from the field, 3-4 from deep, 6 free throws, and you know, he's just becoming a legitimate offensive player every single night now.
Yeah, when you need that clutch bucket from Joe Harris, whether it's you want a strong drive or you just want an absolute money three, you know Joey Buckets is going to be there. And he never forces the issue. It's very rare for him that, you know, you'll see him make a bad pass, or occasionally he'll make a bad pass on a drive, but he's the right decision in the first place to make the drive. So when the Nets needed a bucket, whether, you know, he obviously is a big fan of the Charlotte Arena, winning the three-point contest there. But yeah, he was just so important. And I mean, all around, I think the rotation, and I mean, we could have a general discussion about that. I think a lot of Nets fans will be happy with it. But the starters tonight, we sort of talk about, you know, how the bench is sort of the one that lifts the team a lot of the time. And our bench is probably one of the best, if not the best, in the league. I think our starters really set the tone and probably were the biggest part. And Joe Harris as well. Again, I'm not a big advocate for plus minus, but plus minus plus 14, the plus minus, easily the number one guy on our team.
Yeah, for a second, I thought you were going to say you're not a big advocate of Joe Harrison. I was going to be like, Jack, you're lying. But no, the starters, I thought in the first half, it was pretty even. The starters and the bench both played well, but the bench was pretty bad in the second half. They were on the floor, a big part of that Charlotte run, and the starters pulled out the game in the end and got the W. So again, starters stepped up, like we said, D'Angelo Russell, Joe Harris, Jared Allen. You know, also, I thought Karis LeVert had some moments where he's finding form, but the rhythm just isn't quite there in some of the plays. He looked a little out of control.
Yeah, and it was nice to see him hit those two threes. You know, so, I mean, you take the good with the bad with the guy who's coming back from a pretty serious injury. So, it certainly weren't the prettiest of threes, but the fact he's hitting them, that's all that really matters. And there was times where, yeah, like you mentioned, Nick, he looked a little bit erratic, but the energy, the effort, all the things that we love about Karis was there. His defense was great. His rebounding was really good. And, you know, I think that as this season progresses and, you know, we have this nice little homestand, I think that the chemistry and the cohesion between him and D'Lo, it almost seems like now D'Lo is obviously the guy, but I think Karis can be able to balance himself off him. And I think, you know, when Spencer gets back as well, probably replaces Shabazz Napier, I think it's going to be good things going forward.
Yeah, it's just especially when you go from when you're playing and you're the guy with the ball all the time. Now D'Lo has the ball all the time. It's kind of just adjusting. And you mentioned the defense from LeVert. That's going to be where he really helps his team. Another steal tonight, just creating those turnovers and getting crazy on defense, bringing the energy and the effort. He does a great job kind of fighting over screens sometimes, especially when he's in rhythm and really locked in defensively. But overall, just a really nice performance to see him physically looking good. But Rodion's got some minutes tonight, Jack. That was something I think a lot of Nets fans are happy about.
I think everyone would be happy about. I think, you know, Coach Kenny, if he's checking Twitter tonight, he'll be a happy man. Do you reckon Coach Kenny definitely doesn't have burners, does he?
I don't think so. He seems like a guy that's like really engaged into like his life, and like he wouldn't waste time on like social media. He'd be like, oh, that's stupid. He's either like working on Nets stuff or with his family, I would assume.
Yeah, I reckon he's the guy that carries around notebooks and is like busy writing and stuff. And I mean, I've got myself a notebook as well, so I'm not going to hate, but I'm also, my phone is like another limb to me. But yeah, I think that the rotation tonight was probably ideal, Nick. I don't think many people would argue with that. The offense just looked very smooth with Rodion's at the four at times. He made plays. It just seemed to be, despite the fact he only had 10 minutes, it just seemed to be the right sort of movement. And, you know, Trevion Graham was good as well. I think, you know, 3-6 in the field and hit a three, and, you know, his defense was good. And I think that sort of interchange between Trevion, Damari, and Rodion's is going to be the way going forward. Despite the fact that it might hurt some Rondae Hollis-Jefferson fans and himself, I think that in terms of the offense working at its best, and I think that the Caris LeVert return makes up and helps the defense on that side of the floor as well. So I think that this is the ideal rotation going forward. I'll be interested to see Coach Kenny's comments if he's asked some questions about that as well. But, you know, we could still see some Jared Dudley and Rondae minutes, but I think it'll be easy for a guy like Jared Dudley to accept the fact that he's not getting some. And, you know, there might be a few niggles along the way. We know the Nets like to play very cautiously with our guys. And I think that, you know, there'll still be a spot in the rest of the season, the last 20 games or so, for Rondae and for Jared to play some sort of a role.
Yeah, guys get in foul trouble too. You know, you have to go to guys that maybe you're not necessarily going to play, especially if someone like Rodion's gets four fouls or Trevion or something like that. But I think what it says about the position, you know, Rodion's coming off the bench and playing the four, he didn't necessarily do a ton, but he understood his role. And that's something that Rondae has trouble with. He tries to do too much when he's out there. And also the fact that Rodion just brings a perimeter threat and Rondae doesn't really bring much of that at all.
Yeah, and it's just, and I think Rodion's, it's funny you sort of mentioned the fact that the control and stuff. And there's times we've said that Rodion's can look a little bit out of control, but the fact that he seemed calm, his presence out there, it just fitted. You know, the feed, I think that when he was with Shabazz, it was when Shabazz looked his best because he was able to, you know, get the ball off and find a moving player. Whereas for a lot of the time throughout the night in his 15 minutes, Shabazz would hoist some unnecessary shots. And a few guys were guilty of that, but I think Shabazz was probably mostly, you know, 15 minutes and 10 shots. It's a bit lofty, but at the same time, you know, I think that going forward, you know, maybe Caris plays a little more of a ball handling role, but we can't hate too much on Shabazz because at the same time, we did get the win.
Yeah, and he's a third string point guard. You know, he's not the backup point guard. He's a guy filling in for Spencer Dinwiddie. When Dinwiddie's in there, now this bench unit takes a huge jump because Dinwiddie has a better balance of when to take shots and when to pass the ball. And also, he's a better shot maker, I would say, especially from the perimeter. He's more consistent, where Shabazz is just really hot or cold. Like, he'll knock down two threes and then he'll miss three straight. And like you said, he took 10 shots. And I would probably say three or four of those shots were just really bad takes, like just unnecessary, too early in the shot clock or just over a defender, where I thought later in the game there was a couple of plays where he got in the lane. I think that's when he's at his best.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for him as well. He had a decent enough matchup in Tony Parker, similar sort of size. I think that that's a mold he could sort of look towards. I think Shabazz at this stage of his career is a little bit of a better three-point shooter, but he does take some bad shots, whereas Tony Parker is still finding ways to just put up buckets. He's a tremendous player and a great fit for the Charlotte Hornets right now. But Nick, what were your thoughts in the first half? It seemed to be some of the better basketball that the Nets were playing for most of the season.
Yeah, honestly, I loved it. I loved the team basketball. I just think a lot of team aspects of the game. Player movement was great. Ball movement was great. You saw a lot of hockey assists. There was a couple plays that come to mind. You know, Joe Harris drove or D'Angelo drove. They passed to each other and the next guy hit Jared Allen for a dunk. Just a lot of good player and ball movement. Then also, I thought that team rebounding was really good in the first half. Second half, not so much. Even team defense was good. It just felt like a cohesive unit in that first half. In the second half, they just got out of sync. And I think a lot of credit goes to Charlotte because they were very physical and they took the Nets out of what they wanted to do.
Yeah, they certainly stepped up, you know, forcing certain shots. They were defending really well. you know, being able to put a lot of pressure on the ball handler, force him to sort of over dribble. It looked very stagnant, and the flow looks a lot better in that sort of first half. But there were moments where, you know, sometimes you just need that go-to guy, and thank God for D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God for D'Angelo Russell. When we get LeVert healthy, we'll have another guy that can do that, and another guy when Dinwiddie's healthy, you know. So the Nets are going to have options moving down the stretch, especially they run a good offense and they can run good sets. But obviously sometimes, especially in the playoffs where it gets really physical, teams are going to knock you out of that. So it's on to guys to make one-on-one plays. One thing, Jack, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. We saw this in the Portland game. We saw it in the Charlotte game. The Nets are having a real trouble with high pick and rolls against good guards. You know, because the center is going to drop back so far. You know, Kemba Walker, CJ McCollum, Dame Lillard. You know, if the Nets guard gets caught in the screen, they're just in trouble, and then the other team's going to get an open shot. What do you think they need to do to adjust that, or is that just something they're going to live with?
It's hard because I think that there's such an emphasis on defensive rebounding, Nick, that you're sacrificing a little bit of that at the same time. So I think it's a catch-22 situation. I think it's certainly something to watch. I don't think it's, you know, coming down maybe into the playoffs when it's, you know, if we happen to make it and we're coming up against a guy like a Kyrie Irving or one of those sort of players, who's probably the most dangerous point guard, you know, in the East right now. Anyway, you know, I don't think, and who knows, we could come up. There's not really anyone else in the Eastern Conference that sort of worries me in that sort of aspect. Maybe Kyle Lowry. But at the same time, you know, I think that he's lost a step or two due to age and due to just health as well. He's back certainly getting to him. So I think it's something to watch and something to sort of scout for. But I think it's a game-by-game basis because, you know, we're not going to be versus Portland very often there. I think that game proved sort of where the Nets are at. You know, the Portland Trailblazers are a top-four team. I believe they're still a top-four team in the Western Conference. And the Western Conference is absolutely stacked and by far the better conference in terms of overall depth. Whereas we are around that sort of mid-range, mid-tier, just under that mid-tier in the playoffs for the Eastern Conference. And we sort of saw that tonight against the Hornets. We're a similar sort of team. We have similar sort of talents. I think our depth and our coaching is a little bit better. And our overall offense and schemes are better. But, you know, the Charlotte Hornets have a guy like Kemba Walker and Tony Parker who can do some things as well. So it's something to watch. And I think it'll be something to watch more against a team like Boston. But it has to be, you know, if that's the case, you've got to focus on the wings and the guards really boxing out hard.
Yeah, I think one thing they could do, and obviously this is going to take a lot of effort, just the guards getting over the screens really well, just puts a lot of pressure on them, and that's something they're going to have to do the whole game if they're going to run with that scheme. But like you said, they're not necessarily going to face the elite guards in the playoffs anyways, but still always something to keep in mind. Talking about the Portland game and Charlotte game, you brought up the talent comparison, and the one positive thing on the Nets' hand is Spencer Dinwiddie didn't play in either of these games. And obviously he's a very good player. You could argue he's, you know, top three Nets player on the team, and he's been clutch, sixth man of the year type. So I think that bodes well for the squad.
Yeah, when you have one of your best players out, it's going to be tricky to continue to be at your best and be the fullest version of what you are. And we saw that through stretches, for very minor stretches throughout the season. You know, that sort of early part of the season where Caris LeVert was really dominating. But Azadeen made a point in the chat section, Nick, about not just guarding the high pick and roll, but guarding the mid-range off the picks better. I'll give you my thoughts on it before you give yours. I think the Nets are happy giving away those sort of shots. We know that they really have a really huge emphasis on guarding the perimeter. You know those high value shots. You know, 3 points is more than two. So I think they're more than happy to sort of give away those sort of shots. Whereas in the paint on the perimeter, that's where you want to defend. Despite the fact that I remember this stat coming from somewhere that teams like the Pacers and the Bucks, you know, they guard the perimeter, but they don't place a massive emphasis on it. It's, you know, if we just want to guard as well as we can. And they give away, I think, the most corner threes in the NBA as well. So it's an interesting fact, but I think the Nets are defensively sound. And giving away those mid-range shots, I think you need to be worrisome about it when it gets to be a certain point. And there were times tonight where Tony Parker and Kemba were sort of having their way. But I'd still be... And they weren't necessarily horribly uncontested shots. They were just, you know, some nice picks of Bismack Biyombo and other bigs.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right, Jack, that that's something the Nets are okay giving up. But, you know, when it comes to a playoff series and a guy is really hot for mid-range, they might have to make the adjustment. Right now, I think it's just maybe improving the help defense a little bit, kind of sliding in if your guy gets lost, but then you worry about giving up the open three. So I think depending on the player, they really don't care about the mid-range shot, like you said. you know, threes are worth more than twos, obviously.
Yeah, and it was just it's just funny that like some of the best defensive teams in the league are fine giving up certain shots because they back their talent, and you know they'll just give those shots away because they just don't happen to make them against them. It's interesting. You obviously have to play it on a game by game basis, and you know things get easier to sort of scout in terms of the fact that you're versing the same team in the playoffs a couple of times. And I know we're still forecasting, but this little stretch coming up now, I know the Yes Network had a nice in-depth chat about it, but this little home stretch here before we you know have a really tough, you know, sort of March, April to end the season is going to be super important.
Yeah, it is. And there's a really good opportunity for the Nets to go on a nice win streak here. You know, maybe not the entire stretch, but a couple, you know, 4 or 5 game win streak, especially when they're going to go on the road. They're going to face a lot of good teams over the last 13 games. This is a big moment for the team. I thought tonight was a big moment as well. You know, not necessarily that the Hornets are the best team they're going to face over the next couple of weeks. It's just the situation. You know, they're close in the standings, one game apart, and they're able to pull out the win. I think it says a lot about the team.
I think it says a lot about the team as well, Nick. I think that, you know, we were all disappointed about in that Portland performance, but, you know, coach, the ability for Coach Kenny and the leaders within this locker room to just, you know, put it behind you and get on to the next one, you know, it's a game-by-game scenario. And I think that, you know, a lot of teams think too far ahead. You know, we saw the Lakers tonight, you know, go down to the Pelicans because they're just so all in on, you know, making the playoffs now. And we see all over bloody Lakers Twitter, they're doing Photoshops for bloody Zion Williamson now. It's a wonderful thing. I love seeing Lakers. I have massive schadenfreude about the Lakers being unsuccessful because, you know, thanks for D'Angelo Russell, guys. I'm sure that he'd be nice alongside LeBron James right now, rather than a guy who can't, who's probably shooting worse from the free throw line than our boy is shooting from the 3-point line.
True. Hey, if they had D'Angelo Russell, they might be able to make a package for AD that they'd actually want, but that's for another day. But Jack, anybody else on the roster you think deserves some love for tonight's performance? You know, Jamari didn't necessarily shoot great, but he had a couple big buckets when it really mattered.
Yeah, and he was doing the caroling, as our guys like to say, where he would just be able to draw contact. Couple of obviously great offensive rebounds from Ed Davis. He was sensational in that department. So I think that, you know, and Alan Crabb as well, despite the fact that, you know, he didn't shoot well and, you know, his plus minus was probably the worst, he didn't seem horrible. Like, and I think that that's just for me an optics thing, you know, compared to some of his bad games last season where it looked like, you know, he lacked confidence or he didn't want to be out there or something. But Alan Crabb still looked okay despite, you know, the box score stats.
That's 100% spot on, Jack. You know, last year when he played and he had a bad game, you could feel it. It had an impact on the court. Tonight, he wasn't necessarily great, but he wasn't bad. His impact wasn't felt in a negative way where he's taking a whole bunch of bad threes or he's getting beat on defense or he has a lot of turnovers. He just missed some shots. You know, he played his role.
Now, Nick, before we end this one, forecasting forward, do you think that we sort of touched on it, you know, a little bit and we sort of said that this might be the ideal rotation? Do you think that this sort of 10-man rotation right now is the one that Coach Kenny goes with for the foreseeable future?
I think so. Obviously, until Spencer comes back, I think as long as Rodions does his thing, he doesn't get too crazy, doesn't turn over the ball, get in crazy foul trouble, miss assignments and that, I don't think Kenny's going to have a reason to bench him. And I think Rodions has a feel for that because you kind of felt the energy instantly when he came in the game and he knows he's fighting for minutes right now.
Oh, yeah, big time. And one minor thing on that, I think, yeah, you hit it on the head right there. We sort of talked about in the preseason and I talked about in the last episode in terms of minutes distribution. Couple of guys more than 30 minutes tonight. D'Angelo Russell, 35. Jared Allen, 31. Joe Harris, 33. And Caris LeVert, 30. So I think Coach Kenny has become a lot more liberal in the way that he's distributing his minutes now. If there's guys that are hot out there, he's leaving them out there. He's not taking D'Angelo Russell out at the 7-minute mark of each quarter or whatever it might be. And that's something that, you know, he's growing as well. You know, he is a very young coach in terms of his experience. So it's nice to see these little things and just something I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, and I think it's also part of the mindset is, you know, first half of the season, you rest your guys a little bit. So in the second half of the season, you can play them a little bit more in games that you really need to win. So I think it's kind of that bigger picture. And like you said, Kenny's getting a little bit more flexible, not really pulling guys as much. He's building confidence and trust in all of his players now, especially D'Angelo. And I think, you know, that's something that's been featured in many articles. Their trust has taken another step this year.
Yeah, I think that there's just trust across the board. And, you know, it's the key to any quality relationship, Nicholas.
It's true.
We have great trust in each other and that we are going to provide awesome Nets content for OTG Basketball and S Republic and everywhere else. But yeah, I think that the trust across the board, you know, it was one thing that was sort of, you know, a sort of sticking point. You know, D'Angelo Russell hadn't earned it yet. When is he going to earn it? I think that point has come. And I think that, you know, Rodion's is probably the next sort of guy and that sort of thing. In that sort of area that he's probably going to be working to earn that trust. There was a point where it seemed that he had it, but I think that it's just his form as well. You know, his form is up and down, and you need to earn your minutes. You need to earn your time on the court in the NBA. And, you know, 10 minutes, despite the fact that, you know, it wasn't an amazing 10 minutes. It wasn't, you know, 10 minutes, 10 points or whatever. It was a very solid 10 minutes and, you know, could improve to 15. It's just a game-by-game proposition. I think Rodion's is going to keep on growing with these sort of performances.
100%, Jack. And I think if there's games where maybe Trevion Graham plays really bad or gets in foul trouble, we could see Rodion's pick up the minutes and whatnot. Any other topics you want to touch on before we get out of here, Jack?
Can't think of any, Nick. We've touched on so many in the mailbag and stuff, but it's always fun chatting after a win. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and this was a close one, and, you know, it got down to the wire, but it's always nice, especially to win those close wins against a team in the standings when it really matters. So, Jack, as always, a pleasure. Appreciate everybody checking in, listening, viewing, whatever it is. Check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube, and NetsRepublic.com. Thank you, guys, and let's go Nets.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.